U.S. Marshal Ace Wilkins rode slowly down a mountain trail that led south from Pueblo, keeping his eyes peeled for any sign of a campfire or other evidence of the presence of the outlaw band he was hunting. Behind him rode his two deputies, Lewis McCarthy and Samuel Bogart, men who were barely out of their teens, but who felt it was exciting to be deputy marshals. A thought that Marshal Wilkins knew would soon sour, just as soon as they found out that the job usually meant long hours on a lonesome trail, doing work that was 90% boring and 10% terrifying. The three lawmen had with them five privates in the U.S. Army, all that the commanding officer of the post nearest Pueblo had said he could spare. He gave as a reason continuing trouble with the renegade Pawnee Indians, who'd been raiding some mining camps in the mountains north of Pueblo. From the looks of the men sent to ride with him, Wilkins was fairly certain the captain in charge had sent his most useless troops, men who would probably be more trouble than they were worth if push came to shove. After hearing the report from Sally Jensen, Wilkins had decided to make a wide sweep to the south in hopes of getting ahead of the outlaws and catching up to them before they had time to get to any nearby ranches or mines and cause more deaths. Just as he was getting ready to call a halt to the search for the day and make camp, Wilkins's nose twitched. He thought he'd caught a whiff of smoke in the air. It didn't smell like campfire smoke, more like a cigarette burning. The sun was almost down, and the air was gloomy with pre-sundown semi-darkness and the persistent ground fog that rose every evening as temperatures fell. Off to their right, Wilkins saw the rosy glow of a lit cigarette among bushes next to the trail. With a start, he realized they were riding into an ambush.
Look out! It's a trap!
Wilkins spurred his horse off the trail and over a ledge to a steep, precipitous incline. Marshal Wilkins's horse ran and jumped, trying to keep its balance as it half stumbled down the steep hill next to the trail. Bullets whined around Wilkins's head. 50 yards down the hill, his mount's left foot hit a hole covered up by deep snow. He snapped his leg like a stick. The horse swallowed his head and sent Wilkins flying ass over elbows out of the saddle. A small Norfolk pine broke his fall, and he landed in a snowbank covering some bushes. Wilkins lay still behind the bush as bullets popped the snow around him, two of which hit and killed the horse.
Come on, men! If he's not dead, he'll freeze to death up here without no horse.
As they disappeared out of sight over the edge of the slope, Wilkins moved on hands and knees off to one side to get behind a large pine tree. He lost his pistol in his mad rush down the hill, and he was trying to decide if he should make a run for his horse to get his long gun out of his rifle boot.
Well, looky here, boys. One of those star packers is still alive. Not anymore, he ain't.
Damn.
Wilkins shook his head, knowing both his deputies must have been killed in the attack.
So much for the glory and excitement of being a marshal.
Wilkins eased over to his horse and slipped his rifle out of its scabbard. He grabbed his saddlebags, threw them over one shoulder, put the rifle over the other one, and started walking away from the trail.
If it's the last thing I ever do, I'll make those bastards pay for what they did here today.
Smoke was taking his watch, sitting on the porch of the Sanders cabin, smoking a cigarette and drinking a cup of coffee to keep awake while the other men slept. The moon was almost full and cast a ghostly glow over the snow and trees of the mountainside. On any other occasion, Smoke would have been thinking about how beautiful the High Lonesome is in winter. But this night, his heart was outraged at the fate of the Sanders couple, two people who'd never done any harm to anyone and who just wanted to live out their lives together in the beauty of the mountains around their ranch. His jaw muscles were bunched and tight, thinking of how sweet it would be when he finally caught up with the bandits. Suddenly, his eyes caught movement in the trees above the cabin. He was on his feet in an instant, his Henry rifle in his hands, as he stared at the trail leaning down to the cabin from the mountain. He saw three figures on horseback, riding as rapidly as the scant light would allow, all leaning forward as if their lives depended on getting wherever they were going in a hell of a hurry. Smoke reached behind him and banged once on the door to alert the others they had company coming. And then he knelt down behind the rail, running around the porch, and placed his rifle on it for steady aim. He eared back the hammer and waited to see what would happen.
Yo, cabin!
Smoke stood up, holding his rifle in plain sight, letting the moonlight sparkle off the barrel.
Hold it right there, gents.
Don't shoot, mister. We're soldiers.
Get down off your horses and approach the cabin with your hands held high.
The three men, one of them limping badly, walked toward the house with their hands up.
Monty, get some lights on, would you?
Sure, Smoke.
Monty turned back into the house to light some lanterns in the parlor. The men got to the porch.
We were ambushed a couple hours ago by some escaped convicts. My friend here took a bullet in the ass, and he needs some help.
Smoke took in their army uniforms and saw that their saddles also had army insignia on them, so he lowered his rifle.
Come on in, boys. We'll get you some hot coffee and food and see what we can do about your friend's wound.
The men were given some hot coffee and reheated biscuits and beans. And while they ate, Pearlie worked on the wound in the injured man's butt. The bullet had gone through the fleshy part of his hip muscle and posed no real problem.
What's your name?
I'm Marcus Giles. That there's Johnny Wyatt and Carlos Balboa.
Tell us what happened.
Well, our captain sent us out to ride the mountains with this U.S. Marshal named Wilkins. Seems Wilkins has been in Pueblo when this woman came in on a southbound train with a load of other women who've been beaten up and raped by these men who escaped from the territorial prison over in Utah.
Go on.
Marshal Wilkins and his two deputies and us began to move south along the trails from Pueblo. He said he was hoping to flank around the outlaws and catch them before they could do any more harm.
And did you catch up to them?
Yeah. We was going down this trail just before dark, and all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, these men jumped out of the bushes and commenced to fire on us.
The marshal led you into a trap?
It weren't his fault, exactly. The outlaws gave us no warning at all, just sort of appeared.
What happened to the marshal and the two deputies?
Well, I don't know about the marshal. He yelled to look out just before the outlaws opened fire and jumped his horse off in the trail into the brush. The two deputies and the two soldier friends of ours were blown out of the saddles before you could spit.
So at least four men are dead. But you don't know if the marshal survived or not.
That's right.
And you didn't bother to go back and check on him to see if he was wounded or lying out in the snow somewhere?
No. Well, there's a whole bunch of men out there taking pot shots at us. We weren't about to go back and see if anyone was left alive. There weren't hardly no way a man could have survived that shooting.
Where did this shooting take place?
About 5 or 6 miles northeast of here.
Isn't your post up near Pueblo to the north? Why were you traveling south?
We didn't rightly know which way to go to get away from the outlaws. We was planning on turning back towards the post in the morning.
Finish your food, Private Giles. You think they were planning on deserting, don't you?
Well, it's plain to see they're the bottom of the barrel. That's probably why their captain sent them with a marshal. He was probably glad to get rid of them.
You think there's any chance this Marshal Wilkins is still alive?
Most likely not. But I've known a lot of marshals in my day, and most of them are damned hard to kill.
We better ride on out to where the attack took place and see what we can find. If nothing else, we can bury the deputies and soldiers who were killed, and see which way the outlaws headed after the attack.
You think we should wait until daylight? I don't rightly relish the idea of riding into an ambush like the marshal did.
No, we can't afford to wait. If by some chance the marshal or one of the other men is still alive, they'll freeze before morning if we leave them out there. Besides, as cold as it is, the outlaws are going to be sitting around a fire somewhere, not hiding in the bushes waiting to see if anyone returns to the scene of the ambush.
I hope you know what you're talking about, Smoke.
Well, if I'm wrong and the outlaws ambush and kill us all, I'll apologize, Bob.
I'm gonna hold you to that, Smoke.
After the ambush, Ozark Jack Berlin led his men away from the area in case someone else was following the men he'd killed. As they rode back, Blue Owl pulled up next to him.
Say, boss, you noticed two of them men were wearing army uniforms.
Yeah, I noticed.
I thought by going south we'd get away from the army.
Me too. At least they didn't send a whole company after us.
not too concerned about 5 or 6 men.
Yeah, but the Army's got telegraphs. They're bound to notify their posts farther south to be on the lookout for us, especially after all the bluecoats we killed lately.
I know. That's why I decided not to go any farther south just yet.
No?
No. I think we'll turn and head back up into the mountains. Long as these winter storms keep coming, it's going to keep the Army from coming after us in force.
It's going to be slim pickings up in the mountains, boss. Men are expecting to get rich robbing banks and trains and such. They ain't going to take kindly being told we're going back up into the high country.
And don't be too sure about there being slim pickings in the mountains. Remember, there's more mines than you can shake a stick at. There's ranchers with no banks to keep their money in. And best of all, there ain't a whole lot of law up here to bother us.
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way.
That's why I'm leading this here gang and not nobody else, Blue Owl. Now you tell the men it won't do no good to rob a bunch of banks and get a bunch of money and then not be able to spend it because the Army got us dangling from the end of a rope.
You're right, boss. It won't do no harm to winter over in the mountains, pick off a few mines and ranches, and then head down south next year when the heat's off and everybody's forgotten all about us.
My thoughts exactly, Blue Owl. I'm gonna leave it up to you to convince the men to stick with us through this. The more of us there are, the less chance anybody will be able to stand against us when we come a-calling.
You leave the men to me, boss. Anybody don't like the way things are being handled can argue about it with my pistol.
That's what I like about you, Blue Owl. You have such a way with words.
Once the three soldiers had eaten and gotten their fill of coffee, and Carlos Balboa's butt wound was properly bandaged, Smoke's group saddled up their mounts and had the men lead them back toward where the ambush had taken place. The soldiers were understandably reluctant to return to the area, but Smoke finally convinced them it would be safe, that the outlaws had undoubtedly left by now. When they rounded a turn in the trail, Private Giles reined his horse to a halt, pointing it down the path.
I think it was just up there, Smoke.
You men stay here. I'll go on ahead on foot and see what I can tell from the tracks.
Smoke walked down the trail, his head up, reading tracks as easily as if they'd been a book telling him what had happened earlier that night. The moon was still up, so he had sufficient light to make out the marks in the snow. He found where the outlaws had been camped, and he saw how they'd arrived out into the brush alongside the trail. Something must have alerted them to the arrival of the marshal and his men. Evidently, the marshal's party had made enough noise so that the gang knew they were coming and had time to arrange an ambush. Either that, or the outlaw leader was smart enough to have men stationed along his back trail to warn him of anyone tracking him. Smoke walked around the scene, seeing just how it had come down. He found the dead bodies sprawled just where they'd fallen. One of the men had a bullet wound to the head, surrounded by powder burns, indicating he'd been still alive after the assault, and someone had put a bullet in his head at close range. 20 yards farther up the trail, he found disturbed snow alongside the road where the marshal had jumped his horse down the slope. There was no blood alongside the marshal's horse's tracks, so perhaps he hadn't been hit.
Bring the men over here, Monty.
When Monty and the other men arrived, Smoke pointed down the slope.
Here's where Marshal Wilkins took off.
Well, that's a mighty steep slope, Smoke. I don't see how his horse could have stayed on his feet, especially in the dark.
Speaking of horses, why don't you and Cal ride around and see if you can round up the dead man's mounts? We're going to need them to carry the bodies when we're done.
Pearly nodded and motioned for Cal to follow as he rode off up the trail.
What are you going to do, Smoke?
I'm going down that slope. See if the marshal is still alive.
Well, that's a hell of a drop-off.
Don't worry, boys. This is a mountain pony I'm riding. He's used to much worse.
With that, Smoke spurred the horse forward over the hill and down the slope, taking it slow and easy and letting his mount take the best way down. At the bottom of the hill, Smoke found the marshal's horse lying dead, its legs twisted under it and several bullet holes in it. Smoke eyed the tracks around the horse and noted the saddlebags were missing and the rifle boot was empty.
Well, well, well. Looks like the marshal survived the trip down. Now let's see if he survived the cold.
Smoke got down off his horse and led it by the reins as he followed the marshal's tracks in the snow. He saw no other tracks, so he knew the outlaws hadn't bothered to track the marshal, which meant he had a good chance of still being alive. After he'd gone 200 yards, Smoke saw the tracks heading out of the clear and into the brush. The marshal was looking for cover to hold up until dawn.
Marshal Wilkins! Marshal, we've come to help you. We're friends. Don't shoot.
How do I know you're friends?
How else would I know your name, Marshal? Some of your men escaped and brought us back here. Come on out now. Keep my hands in the air.
I can't. My damn feet are near frozen.
I'm coming in.
Smoke walked into the bushes. He found the marshal burrowed down in the snow, pine boughs and limbs pulled over him to keep the cold out, his rifle barrel pointing out through the cover at Smoke.
If you'll point that rifle somewhere else, I'll help you out of here.
Come on, mister. I'm in no shape to fight back, if you're not who you say you are anyway.
30 minutes later, Smoke had the marshal back up the slope, having put him on his horse and led the horse back the way they'd come.
Pearly, Cal, build a fire, quick.
While Cal and Pearly got a fire going, the other men helped the marshal off the horse and laid him on a ground blanket next to the flame.
Thank God you came. I managed to get my saddlebags off my horse, but my matches were wet, and I didn't have no way to start a fire.
Another couple of hours and you'd have froze to death.
Guthrie pulled the marshal's boots off and began to rub his feet.
Oh, that hurts!
You've got the beginnings of frostbite here, Marshal. You're gonna be lucky if you don't lose some toes.
Better my toes than my whole foot.
What about the other bodies?
They look like they'd been stripped. The boots and most of their belongings were gone, including their guns and ammunition.
Smoke looked around and noted three new horses tied up next to his men's.
I see you found some mounts.
Only three, Smoke. The other one either ran off or was taken by the outlaws.
Would you see about getting the dead men on two of them? We're going to need one for the marshal here.
You mean we're not going to bury him here?
No. Seeing as how we're going to have to take the marshal back to Pueblo, might as well save time by sending the bodies back too.
But I thought we were going after the outlaws.
They've turned and headed back up into the mountains. There's no hurry.
But Smoke, what if we lose their tracks under new snow?
We won't. Cal and Pearly and I will go on tracking them. You and Jed can take the marshal and bodies and other soldiers back to Pueblo.
No, I want to go with you. Those bastards killed my men.
Bob, be reasonable. I don't trust those other soldiers to go back to Pueblo. The marshal is in no shape to travel by himself, and Jed would only be one against three if the soldiers decided to hightail it south instead of north. I think it'd be safer all around if you went back with them and explained things to the army captain up there.
But I got...
With any luck, you'll be able to convince him of the need to send another squad up into the mountains to go after the outlaws. Remember, there are lots of miners and ranchers up there who are going to need our protection.
Damn it, Smoke! I want revenge for what they did to my men!
You'll get it, Bob. Just be mighty convincing when you talk to the army captain.
Monty turned to his horse and climbed in the saddle.
You want me to help you track these bastards, Smoke?
No, Monty. This figures to be a long campaign. Hell, it might take weeks before we manage to catch up to them. Your place is back at Big Rock.
The hellfire, Smoke. It'll just be the three of you going up against more than 30 of those outlaws.
Like I said, Monty, that's liable to be weeks from now. The people of Big Rock elected you to take care of the town, not traipsing all over the mountains looking for escaped convicts. Besides, what if the outlaws turn south again and decide to hit Big Rock? You need to be there to make sure the town's ready, just in case.
I guess you're right, Smoke, but that don't mean I like it.
I don't particularly like it either, Monty. But sometimes, we have to do things we don't want to.
Remember, Smoke, I'll be in Big Rock if you need me.
I know, Monty. You take care on the ride back to town, you hear?
I just hope those sons of bitches do try to treat Big Rock. They'll be in for the surprise of their lives.
Ozark Jack Berlin led his men in a wide circle back to the west, edging upward into the mountain range just above Big Rock, Colorado.
Why are we going this way? Aren't we heading back toward the men who are trailing us?
Yeah, it's something they'll never suspect.
There's someplace special you're heading to?
Blue Owl unfolded the map Berlin had been following and laid it across his saddle horn.
I don't see nothing but mountains on this here map. No towns or nothing.
That's just it, Blue Owl. There's nothing up here to make them suspect we'd head this way. So they're not likely to look for us up here.
But they'll know we're here as soon as we hit some ranches or mines.
Well, who's gonna tell anybody? I don't plan to leave nobody alive to tell anybody what we've done.
But we gotta have some place to hide out. The men are getting kinda tired of camping out in this weather. It figures to be a mite colder the higher we go up into the mountains.
Look on a map where I made an X.
I see the X. Well, I don't see nothing near it except the words Hot Springs.
When we were in load, I asked the assayer if there were any caves up here. He said there were some old Indian caves near the Hot Springs area. But I figure we can hole up there and make our raids from that place. It'll get us out of the weather, and there'll be hot water to use if we need it.
Hot water? You think any of these men are planning on taking a bath?
You never know, Blue Owl. A few weeks stuck in the cave together may make them want to get some of the stink of the trail off.
That'll be the day.
One good thing.
What's that?
This snow's gonna make tracking us almost impossible.
Yeah, but if it keeps falling like this, it's also gonna make it rough going for our mounts.
Yeah, from the looks of that map, we don't have that much farther to go anyhow.
Smoke, along with Cal and Pearly, followed the tracks left by Berlin's gang. As the snow continued to fall and the wind picked up to the north, the tracks were becoming increasingly more difficult to see.
Smoke, if this keeps up, we ain't gonna be able to track squat by afternoon.
I know.
Smoke reined in, fished a compass out of his pocket, and held it out, glancing from it to the track for several minutes.
What you doing?
Since we aren't going to be able to see the tracks much longer, I'm trying to get a fix on the direction they're taking right now. Once the tracks are covered up, we'll just keep going in that direction until we catch up with them.
What if they change course?
Then, we're out of luck. And we'll just have to wait until we hear some news of where they hit next. One thing's for sure, they're not going to stay undercover for long without causing some trouble somewhere.
What's that compass tell you?
Looks like they were making a wide circle back to the northwest.
Northwest? But that's back towards Big Rock, ain't it?
Yes. It looks to me like they're headed back into the mountains north of town.
There ain't nothing up there but some mines and ranches.
Yeah, mines and ranches run by friends of ours.
2 hours later, with all evidence of the outlaws' tracks completely covered and the snow falling so thick they couldn't see the trail in front of them, Smoke decided to make camp.
We gotta get these mounts under cover before we get stranded out in the open.
I don't see no cover handy.
Let's head straight up the mountain.
Within 20 minutes, they came to a thick grove of pine trees nestled up against a cliff.
Ow, yeah.
Perfect. You and Cal get some branches and tree limbs for a lean-to. I'll hobble the horses and get some grain out of the packs.
How about getting a fire started first?
Nope. You're forgetting what I taught you, Cal. The horses get taken care of first, because without them, we're as good as dead.
Within a half an hour, the lean-to shelter was keeping the worst of the wind and snow off of the men and horses. And Smoke had a roaring fire going up against the side of the cliff.
Why'd you build the fire next to the cliff? Looks like it'd be better out in the open so as we could get around it on all sides.
No, it's just the opposite. Building it up against the stone cliffs keeps the flames out of the wind and heats up the rock. Once we go to sleep and the fire dies down, the rock wall will still continue to put off heat for several hours. That way, no one has to stay awake to tend the fire, and the wind won't scatter our coals all over the place.
It's sure nice camping with an old mountain man. Learn all sorts of things.
First things you gotta learn, Pearly, is not to call the mountain man who's teaching you things old.
Yeah. You make Smoke mad, Pearly. He's liable not to let you have seconds on the grub.
Old? Did I say old? Well, I meant to say experienced mountain man.
That's better, Pearly. Now, why don't you take that skillet of bacon and eggs off the fire before all we have to eat is charcoal.
The next morning, Smoke awoke to find 2 feet of snow covering the ground as far as they could see. Smoke climbed out of his sleeping bags, stirred the coals into life, and added some wood from the pile they'd gathered the night before. While coffee and biscuits were heating, stepped out of the lean-to and surveyed the mountain range behind him. Soon, Cal and Pearly stirred, and they squatted next to the fire, holding their hands out to the flames to warm them as they drank coffee and munched on warm biscuits with pieces of jerked beef in them.
What's the plan, Smoke?
Well, it's obvious we're not going to be able to track the outlaws through this layer of snow. I think it's time we head for home.
You mean the sugar loaf?
Yeah. We need to let the horses get some rest. And if we're going to go up into the mountains and take this gang on by ourselves, I want to get some extra provisions and equipment.
We Are you planning on getting some of the hands to go up there with us and help us out?
No. Tracking these men in the High Lonesome is a job for as few men as possible. We're going to need to travel light and fast and be able to hit and run. We can't do that with a whole passel of Flatlanders along to slow us down.
That why you got Jeb and Bob to head back to Pueblo?
Yes, in part. They're both good men, but neither are experienced in high mountain tracking. I hate to see them get killed because they didn't know what to expect.
Speaking of knowing the high mountain country, Smoke, you think we'll run into any of your mountain man friends up here?
Yeah, I hope so. The mountain men know just about everything that's going on in their neighborhoods. If the outlaws are hiding up there, some of the old beavers will know where.
You think we'll see Beartooth or Long John Dupree or
Bull Durham?
I take it you remember old Beartooth, huh?
Both Cal and Pearly nodded, smiling. They'd met Beartooth a couple of years back, when Monty Carson's wife, Mary, had been kidnapped by Big Jim Slaughter, and they had gone with Smoke to help rescue her.
Well, if he's still alive and kicking, which I suspect he is, we'll certainly try to find him. Nobody in the High Lonesome knows more about what's going on up there than Beartooth. He's a natural-born gossip and likes to keep track of who's coming and going in his neck of the woods.
He'd be a big help if we go up against them outlaws, too. He's right handy with that Sharp's Big 50 he carries.
There is that to consider, too. The way I figure it, there's way too many of them for us to try and attack them head-on.
That mean we're gonna do like them ninjas you and Sally are always telling us about?
Yeah. Sort of like we did up in Jackson Hole against Big Jim Slaughter with Muskrat.
Well, you mean hit and run. Terrorize them so they don't know who or what's after them. And keep dogging them till they go crazy with fear?
That's about the size of it.
Old Beartooth would love that. I think he's kind of miffed to miss out on the excitement we had up in Jackson Hole.
If we manage to find him, and he agrees to help us, I have a feeling he'll get his fill of excitement this go-round.
After some running back and forth and checking the map again and again, Ozark Jack Berlin finally managed to find the area marked as Hot Springs in the mountains. He crested a small rise in the trail and looked down into a shallow valley. He saw a 7-foot-wide stream winding through it, with steam rising from the pool in the middle of the valley like ground fog on a humid morning. In the walls of the cliffs surrounding the valley could be seen dark openings of caves scattered around the periphery of the area. Out in the middle of the valley floor, near the steaming pools of hot mineral water, there were 3 clapboard and log cabins that looked to be in moderately good repair.
Well, men, here's our new home for the next few months.
I didn't know there was cabins here. I thought you said we'd be living in caves.
The assayer I talked to didn't mention nothing about no cabins. Guess they've been built since he was up here. Of course, if you want, you can stay in the caves instead.
No, I had my fill of caves back in California.
I didn't know the MODOK lived in caves.
We didn't usually. Well, once, after the Battle of Lost River, the army chased us across some lava fields near Tule Lake. We hid in some caves, and they decided not to try and get us out. It was a smart decision on their part. They would have lost a lot of men trying.
You know, Blue Owl, you make a good point. Those caves would be a whole lot easier to defend if by chance somebody comes calling on us here.
Yeah. Those cabins are kind of out in the open. It'd be too easy to surround them if we came under attack.
Well, I guess what we'll do is fix up the caves with supplies and provisions and ammunition in case that happens. We can stay in the cabins with guards posted on all sides to warn us of any upcoming attack. And at the first sign of it, we'll get on into those caves where we can stand off an army if we need to.
Sounds good to me. See the way the caves are backed right up against the cliffs overhanging them? If we put men in caves on both sides of the valley, there ain't no way anybody could get at us without getting in a crossfire between the two sides. It's a natural fort that'd be hard to attack.
That's what we'll do then.
By the end of the day, Berlin's men had the caves on either side of the valley, fitted out with enough supplies and ammunition to last them several weeks in the event of a siege by the army or anyone else. The men then spread out with minimal belongings in the cabins, which were easier to heat and keep warm, where they would stay unless they were attacked. While several men began to cook supper and heat coffee, the other men used the time to wash out stinking, soiled clothing in the hot water of the springs. A few of the more fastidious even waded out and applied soap to bathe. Berlin and Blue Owl strolled around the camp, checking out the preparations the men had made in the caves.
You notice the temperature down here near the water?
Yeah. It's about 20 degrees warmer than up on the ridge.
So if we do get attacked, we'll be warm down here while our attackers will be freezing their asses off up on the ridge.
Blue Owl walked into one of the caves, lighting a torch he'd made by twisting a pine bough around a stick of wood. As he got toward the back of the cave, the ground began to rise and the ceiling got lower. Soon, he was crawling on hands and knees.
What the hell are you doing?
See how the smoke from the torch blows toward the entrance to the cave?
Yeah, so what?
That means there's an opening back here somewhere. I want to see if it's big enough for a man to get out of.
Why would you want to do that?
Just suppose we get trapped down here in this valley, boss. Wouldn't you like a back door to use to escape, just in case?
You got a point, Blue Owl. Lead on.
After another 50 yards and having to get down almost on their stomachs, they came to a hole in the roof wide enough for a man to squeeze through if he sucked in his gut. They exited the hole to find themselves in a small area between two tall cliff walls, no more than 15 feet across and narrowed at both ends by bushes and small trees so that it was invisible from more than 50 yards.
This is perfect.
Yeah, only problem is once we get out of the cave, we'd be on foot up here in this godforsaken wilderness. I'd almost rather be shot than escape only to starve to death on foot.
I tell you what, boss. Later on, when nobody's looking, I'll take a couple of extra horses and bring them here with enough grain and water to keep them happy. Every so often, I'll bring more so they don't starve to death. That way, push comes to shove, you and I'll have a way out if need be.
That's a good idea. Why don't you pack enough grub for a couple days and leave it here, too?
Never hurts to have a backup plan, does it?
And enough men to keep our enemies busy while we make our getaway.
It took Smoke and Cal and Pearly a day and a half to get back down to the Sugarloaf from where they'd left the outlaws' tracks. While the men thawed out by the fire and ate roast, boiled carrots, and biscuits, Smoke told Sally of their exploits on the trail of the bandits. After he'd finished, he asked her what had happened to her.
Once we got the women seen by the doctor and taken care of, I got on the next train headed for Big Rock. By then the tracks had been repaired, and it was an uneventful trip.
How'd you get out to the Sugarloaf?
Lewis Longmont loaned me a wagon. He offered to ride with me, but since it was the middle of the day, I told him I'd be all right. Before I left, I wired Pueblo, and I told the men there to let me know any news about the men hunting the outlaws. I knew you'd wire me if you got to a town with a telegraph, but I wanted to make sure I heard anything as soon as it happened.
Sally stopped talking when she noticed Cal and Pearly were almost asleep in their chairs.
Cal, you and Pearly go on over to the bunkhouse and get some rest.
Yes, ma'am.
Sally turned to the pump at the sink and began to fill a large bucket with water.
What are you doing?
Sally put the bucket on the stove and began to fill another one.
In case you don't realize it, Smoke Jensen, you smell like you've been holed up for the winter with a bear. I'm fixing you a hot bath to take before you go to bed.
Oh, Sally, I'm dead tired. We've been in the saddle for 2 days straight.
And you smell like you've been in those clothes for a month. You're not getting in my bed smelling like that, mister. Now, if you want to sleep in the bunkhouse with Cal and Pearly, you go straight ahead.
No, I think I can stay awake long enough for a bath.
Only long enough for a bath?
Oh, maybe a little longer than that, if I have a good enough reason to stay awake.
We'll just have to see if I can come up with a good reason then.
The next morning, Sally stood at the stove in the kitchen.
Go wake up Cal and Pearly, would you, dear? I wouldn't want them to sleep through breakfast.
Fat chance. Pearly's never slept through a meal in his life. I bet he's already smelled the bacon cooking and is on his way here right now.
Cal and Pearly walked in.
Did I hear my name?
Pearly headed for the counter where a platter of bear sign was cooling. As he reached for one, Sally tapped his hand with her spatula.
Pearly. Not until after you've had some real food first.
But Miss Sally, bear sign's real food.
Come on and sit down, Pearly. You know you never won an argument with Sally.
That's right, Smoke. And if she wasn't the best cook in the territory, I wouldn't put up with it neither.
You ought to not talk like that, Pearly. Everybody knows you think Miss Sally hung the moon.
Yeah, but don't tell her. It'll just go to her head.
Sally brought heaping plates of scrambled hen's eggs, bacon, sliced tomatoes, and fried potatoes to the table.
Cal, if you'll pour the coffee, I'll get the biscuits out of the oven.
Yes, ma'am.
While they ate, Smoke discussed his plans for the hunt for the outlaws, with Sally every now and then offering suggestions.
The real problem is going to be figuring out where they've holed up.
They could be almost anywheres up there.
That's not true, Pearly. With all the snow that's fallen, we can eliminate some of the places where they'd have to go through deep passes to get to.
Yeah, that's right. Smart idea, Cal. I'll get one of the maps out that Preacher and I worked on our years up there and see if we can figure out which areas are still accessible to Flatlanders. They're for sure not going too high this time of year, not without ponies that are experienced mountain climbers.
Well, I bet they don't have none of those special shoes you and Preacher used to go up through heavy snow, neither. And that means they're going to have to stick pretty much to the trails up there. They won't be able to go cross-country at all.
That does narrow it down some, Smoke. And since they are, as you say, Flatlanders, they won't be comfortable camping out. That means they'll probably try to find an old line shack or miner's cabin to stay in. There can't be too many of those suitable for 30 men.
You're right, Sally. They're going to need at least 3 or 4 cabins to get out of the weather in. Most of the mining camps like that are marked on my map. It'd just be a matter of going to the ones easiest to get to. Sooner or later, we're bound to run across them.
Just make sure you see them before they see you, Smoke. I told you before, I'm getting tired of patching up bullet holes in your hide.
Sally, if I can't sneak up on a bunch of men who've never been up in the High Lonesome before, I wouldn't be much of a mountain man, would I?
But don't forget, dear, these men have all been on the run before. And anyone who's been riding the Owl Hoot Trail for any length of time soon learns how to watch their back. I'm afraid they won't be as easy to surprise as you think they will.
You're right again, as usual, Sally. Any animal that's been hunted does develop an instinct for survival, sooner or later. We'd do well to keep that in mind, boys. Now, after breakfast, I'm going to ride back into Big Rock. I want to make sure Monty has gotten back all right and picked up some supplies for our trip into the mountains.
You want us to go with you, Smoke?
No, not this time. I want you boys to curry the horses and give them plenty of grain. They're going to need all their strength for the trip. Then, I want you boys to get some extra shut-eye. We've been pushing it pretty hard the last week or two. And I want you fit as fiddles when we take off tomorrow.
I can go for that, Smoke.
You don't have to tell Pearly to hit the hay twice, Smoke. The only thing I know of Pearly likes almost as much as eating is sleeping.
I'll go with you, Smoke. I need to pick up some supplies for the ranch. The hands have been complaining they're getting short of nails and wire for the fence repairs they've been doing.
Good. I'll enjoy the company. It'll be a nice quiet trip before I head for the mountains.
Ozark Jack Berlin stood in the cabin where the outlaws had stored their provisions, his hands on his hips. He shook his head. Blue Owl, standing at his side as usual, glanced at his leader.
What are you thinking, boss?
We're getting kind of low on provisions, Blue Owl. Maybe it's time we made a little foray into a nearby town to resupply ourselves.
Nearest town is Big Rock, Jack.
How big is this Big Rock?
Not much bigger than a gnat's ass. Why?
And I'm just wondering how much risk we'd run by going in there and buying some supplies with the gold we stole.
Buying? You mean taking, don't you?
No, since it's the closest town to us, I'd rather not bring any attention to ourselves by stirring up any trouble. I think it'd be better if you just took a few men in there, not too many so as not to cause any talk, and just bought what we need.
That's a right good idea, boss. I've been hankering for some female companionship ever since we left those women on the train.
No, you don't. I said I don't want any attention to be drawn to you. Leaving a woman all cut up ain't exactly the way to sneak in and out of a town, Blue Owl.
Oh, boss. Just won't seem right to go all the way to town and not get close to any women folk.
Well, that's the way it has to be, Blue Owl. Otherwise, I'll send somebody else.
All right, you're the boss.
And make sure while you're in Big Rock, you don't forget it, neither.
After picking up Monty Carson at his office, Smoke and Sally went to Lewis Longmont's saloon to have an early lunch. As they waited for Lewis's French chef, Andre, to prepare their food, Monty told him about his trip down from the mountains.
I tell you the truth, Smoke, a couple of times I thought I wasn't going to make it. Snow up to my mount's withers, the air blowing cold as a well digger's.
I know what you mean, Monty. Why, last week when I tried to cook some of the hen's eggs from the chicken coop, well, they were frozen solid. It's been a really cold winter, and it's just begun.
Like I said, I'm lucky I didn't get frostbite on that trip.
I was sure glad to see Big Rock when I finally got here. Hell, first thing I did was go to my house and hug the big Franklin stove Mary uses to keep the house warm.
This has been just about the coldest winter I can remember for a long time, all right.
Louis Longmont, sitting at the table with him, leaned forward.
How do you think that's affecting those hombres you're looking for, Smoke?
For one thing, they've got to be mighty uncomfortable up in High Lonesome, as cold as it is. From what I can gather, most of them are flatlanders, not used to the weather we're having up here in the high country.
What about supplies? How are they getting them?
The marshal over in Pueblo said he had reports they'd been stealing them, along with extra guns, ammunition, and even dynamite and blasting powder.
Of course, with the weather so cold, and 30 or so men to feed, they're going to be going through lots of grub and supplies. That means it won't be long before they have to hit another ranch or town to resupply themselves.
Conversation ceased when Andre and a young black waiter brought platters of food to the table, and the four friends set to eating the best food west of the Mississippi. Sally glanced up from her plate of roast duck à l'ange, served with mint jelly and freshly steamed vegetables from Andre's private garden.
I swear, Andre, if Louis wasn't such a good friend, I'd try to hire you away from him to cook for us at the Sugarloaf.
I can't do that, Sally, because before long, we'd all be so fat we'd have to ride a buckboard instead of horses.
Yes, dear, but it would be worth it.
Blue Owl and six other men from the outlaw gang reined in their mounts in front of the general store in Big Rock. They had two extra horses to use to pack the supplies they came for.
Boss don't want no trouble. So keep your mouth shut and behave yourself just like ordinary citizens.
Moses Johnson, the huge black man, grinned and rubbed his stomach.
If it means we get some more food to eat, I'll be quiet as a mouse in church. I've been about to starve to death on these meager rations those Ark Jack's been handing out at the camp.
The seven men entered the general store as if they had nothing to worry about. Ed Jackson, who owned the store along with his wife, Peg, looked up from behind the counter where he was arranging some tinned peaches and canned milk.
Howdy, gents. Welcome to my store.
Blue Owl nodded and didn't reply as he and his men spread out and began to fill flour sacks with groceries and staples. As the men piled their goods on the counter, Moses Johnson reached into the jar and took out a handful of peppermint sticks.
That candy sure do smell good.
Ed glanced at the large pile of goods the men were stacking up.
You gents look like you're getting enough food to feed an army.
We figure on doing a little mining up in the high country during this winter. Don't have to stop to come back for supplies any more than we have to.
Well, boys, this ought to last you till next spring.
Smoke and the others were just finishing their lunch when Deputy Jim rushed into Longmont.
Uh-oh. Catch your breath, Jim, and tell me what's got you all riled up.
There's some men over to the general store, Sheriff.
There generally is, Jim.
Yeah, but Sheriff, the men fit the description of that poster you put up about them outlaws you've been looking for.
What?
Andre, I'm gonna be down the street. Shut and lock the front door just in case there's trouble.
The man nodded and retreated back into the kitchen. Sally reached into her handbag, pulled out her snub-nosed .38 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver, and started walking out with the men.
Sally, I don't want you involved in this.
I don't particularly want you involved either, Smoke Jensen. But I don't have any more choice in the matter than you do.
With that, the four men and Sally walked out of the door. Monty and Jim ran across the street and began to walk up the boardwalk toward the general store, while Louis and Smoke did the same on their side of the street. Sally positioned herself in a doorway next to Longmont Saloon and eared back the hammer of her .38 while she waited to see what was going to happen. Blue Owl and Moses Johnson were out in the street in front of the store, tying down the supplies on their pack horses, while the five men with them stood next to the horses. Smoke watched as one of the men elbowed the half-Indian and said something to him.
Get on your mounts and shag tail, boys!
Moses Johnson grabbed the short-barreled shotgun out of his saddle boot and aimed over the back of the pack horse.
They're going for their guns!
Monty dove behind a water trough in the street just as several of the shotgun pellets tore into his right arm just below the shoulder. The outlaws swung into their saddles and jerked their mounts' heads around, trying to get out of town. Smoke and Louis, in one coordinated movement, crouched and drew. As they shot, Marcus Weatherby and Blake Whitney were blown out of their saddles, bullets in their chests. Blue Owl and Moses Johnson spurred their horses down the street, leaning over their saddle horns and firing as they rode. Jim stepped out of the doorway and let go with his shotgun. Slim Bartholomew flew backwards off his horse, a load of buckshot in his gut. Blue Owl fired across his saddle, his bullet hitting Jim in the thigh. George Carver and John Ashby fired at Smoke and Lewis. Smoke rolled to the side, aimed, and fired, hitting Carver between the shoulder blades. He flopped forward, but somehow managed to stay in the saddle as his horse galloped down the street. Lewis lay on his back, firing between his boots, but his shots went wide as the men jigged their mounts back and forth as they rode. Tally stepped out of her doorway, spread her legs, and started firing her .38, unmindful of the bullets whizzing past her head. She hit Carver for the second time, killing him dead. Her gun empty, she stood helpless as Blue Owl aimed his pistol at her as he rode past. Monte Carson scrambled to his knees and raised his shotgun with his left hand, his right arm hanging useless at his side. Monty's load tore into Blue Owl's hand, knocking his pistol to the ground before it could fire at Sally. Blue Owl, John Ashby, and Moses Johnson continued their mad dash out of town as Smoke and Lewis ran to Monty's and Jim's aid.
You all right?
Yeah, damn it. The three of the bastards got away.
Smoke glanced over his shoulder at Sally, relieved to see she was unharmed.
Sally, go get Doc Spaulding.
Sally nodded once, quickly, and ran up the street toward the doctor's office. Monty turned to look at Jim.
Is it going to be all right?
Yeah, he'll be fine.
I better see if any of them are still alive.
I'll help you. Maybe we can get one of them to tell us where the camp is.
As it turned out, all of the men were dead, so no information could be gotten as to the whereabouts of their camp. After Monty and Jim were taken to Doc Spaulding's office, Lewis and Smoke and Sally went back to Lewis's place for some coffee and dessert.
What are you going to do now?
Well, they didn't get the supplies they came to town for, so that means they're going to have to hit a ranch or mining camp soon.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to get the supplies I came for. Then, take Cal and Pearly up into the High Lonesome to see if we can get them before they can hurt anyone else.
You want some company?
No, old friend. As much as I'd like that, with Monty and his deputy both injured, the town's going to need someone who knows how to use a gun to be on guard, in case those outlaws make another try here.
They wouldn't dare.
Don't be too sure, Lewis. If they're as short of food as I think, you never know what they're liable to do.
When Smoke and Sally pulled the buckboard up to their ranch house, Cal and Pearly were waiting, looking rested after their shut-eye.
Everything go all right?
Yes.
Smoke lifted a couple of boxes of dynamite that he had bought from the general store onto his shoulders.
One good thing from the trip to town, you boys will have a few less outlaws to contend with.
What?
Sally here shot one right out of his saddle in front of Longmont's.
You gotta tell us about that.
Come on into the house and I'll fix us all some dinner and Smoke can tell you all about it.
While they ate, Smoke told them about the outlaw's trip into town and how only three of them managed to get away.
Jiminy, I know we should have gone to Big Rock with you.
See, you were right, Miss Sally. Every time Smoke goes anywhere without Cal and me to cover his back, he gets into trouble.
Well, we won't let that happen again, boys. I'm counting on you to make sure nothing happens to him up in the mountains.
You can bet on that, Miss Sally. Pearly and me make sure he don't take no chances, them glutes.
Cal, what are we going to do about your language? When you get back, we need to spend some serious time with one of my English grammar books.
I'd rather go up against an outlaw any day than fight them school books.
Smoke, why'd you buy all them new clothes?
We're going to be going up against a group of men with superior numbers, Pearly. That means we're going to have to use stealth instead of brute force. Since we'll be doing a lot of work at night, I wanted us to wear dark clothing so as not to be able to be seen in the dark.
What about those tins of boot black? You think the outlaws are going to care if our boots are shiny?
The boot black is for our faces, Cal. It's about time for a full moon, and nothing shows up in moonlight like a white face.
You mean we got to put that stuff on our faces?
Not only our faces, but our hands and arms as well.